On this episode of the podcast, I bankrupted a teenager and took all of his money. But I promise you, it was just an exercise. And I feel bad about it. Kind of. But check out this. I'll tell you a little more about it after this. Yes, yes, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the After the Bell Rings podcast. I am your host, Micah Barnes. What you're about to hear is probably one of the most guiltiest moments I've felt in a long time. So just to set the stage of the event, I went to a financial literacy fair for teenagers because I went to another one because I'm looking to put on one myself. I went to this one as kind of a recon research kind of thing. And instead of just going there to observe, instead of just going there for third party, if you will, research, I actually participated. So I got my feet wet a little bit and yeah, I bankrupted a kid. And he ended up like $4,000 in debt. Probably because of me. But as I tell the story, I want you to think about not only the psychology behind why teenagers spend, but why they justify their actions, why they justify their bad spending habits. So check out this recap. Years ago, it might have been, well, I don't want to say years ago, but it might have been last year, where I was always looking to add a financial component to my program, to my the program with my youth leadership group, because why not? Because it's necessary, even at any level, whether it's teenagers, probably earlier than that, because your money habits start from your parents or whoever's around you at a very early age. If they're frugal with money, then you tend to be frugal with money. Like that was my case. But if you spend recklessly, then, or if you're the people around you spend recklessly, then you tend to follow in that same track. So I wanted to, always wanted to add a financial component to my programs. Fast forward, I came across a website called Adolescent Real World. And wherever you are in the world, wherever you are in the country, US, check it out. Check it out. It's a pretty cool workshop. It's a pretty cool event where students learn how to put themselves in real world situations. And it helps them realize how they should best spend their money and what all it takes financially and sometimes internally too. What it takes to live in the real world. And when I say internally, I mean like mindset. Because whatever happens inside of your dome happens inside of your pocket. So if you're insecure in your mind, then your wallet is going to try to overcompensate for that. So I checked out at this real world event and talked to the organizer. We've been in contact for a while. A couple things didn't happen the first time I wanted to do it, so I revisited it a couple months ago. Now, fast forward from a couple months from the last time I talked with the organizer or the lady who designed it, she recommended that I talk to a couple of sponsors, and I have. I talked to one sponsor, one major sponsor. It was a major player in the banking industry at a national level about sponsoring this event. Had a talk with their board, of like community development, and they said, "Hey, have you ever talked to the United Way?" I was like, "No, I haven't talked to them." She said, okay, because they have a similar event. It's like very similar to what you're describing. I'm like, okay, somebody kind of beat me to the punch. So my competitive nature started to kick in. So, but they recommended that I visit this camp or this event. I did. And I'm telling you, when I walked in, it was a very intimate setting. It's like three teenagers and maybe three or four advisors. I don't know what exactly their role was, but I could tell they had been doing that for a while. They had been in the, like, doing this event for a while. And one thing I noticed is that they had a great rapport with the kids. So this wasn't their first time meeting or seeing each other. This was a relationship. So the basic format of the event is each student was given a life card. And I'll be real specific with you on what their life cards were. There were two guys and a girl, about 14, 15 years old, something like that. So two guys and a girl in this workshop. And they were both of them, everybody was married with either a 3, 7, or 9 month old baby. Right? So it was two parent, one child household. That was the case for all three of them. Around the tables, like they had like the trifold presentation display boards around every or on every table. Some of those display boards contained like the mall or a banking institution. Mine was fun stuff. So I had all the recreational activities. I had the parks, the concerts, the board games, everything. And the prices for all of these recreational activities ranged from free all the way up to as much as like $1,500. So we had other ones, the mall, the one right next to me, which was real eye-opening for the kids, is how much childcare actually cost. So they had to buy diapers, they had to get formula, they had to arrange for babysitters. It was pretty, pretty comprehensive, and it should be, because this is real life, this is the real world. So they had to visit all of these different booths, all of these different presentation boards, and there were, like, each volunteer, there were probably about four of us, myself plus three other representatives from this bank. So we had to, among the four of us, we had to man and monitor all of these different booths, all of these different presentation boards, and kind of lead the kids accordingly when they came around to patronize these different booths. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The first kid that comes up to me, it's him, it's his wife, and I think he has a 9-month-old baby. And his job at my booth, at the Fun Stuff booth, four recreational activities. It's to purchase four recreational activities. Because the rules of the Fun Stuff booth are you have to buy two per adult in the household. Or not even per adult, but you have to buy two recreational activities per person over the age of two. In his household, it was him, his wife, and his 9-month-old. 9-month-old doesn't count, so he's got two per person. He immediately went for the mid-level stuff, like stuff that might cost $35 a month, or he went for some of the free stuff. Now, of course, me wanting to give them real world experiences, of course, I go back to the experience that I've had with salespeople. Some were ruthless, some were very generous. So I wanted to give them the worst case scenario. So it's to prepare them for the real world.
And me, I'm trying to upsell everything. My goal is to get them to buy trips, like stuff that cost $1,200 and $1,500, like the big ticket items. And look, right, I don't know why I did this or what the mindset behind this was, but the kid comes up to me and, like I said, he wants to get some of the mid-level stuff. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, you want to go to the, I think he chose the zoo at first. I'm like, the zoo, dude, you got a 9-month-old baby. A 9-month-old baby's not going to remember the zoo. Like, the zoo, and then you go to the zoo once, and then it gets old real fast right after that. So my suggestion to him was to, look, go ahead and get the older, not the older packages, but the higher up packages. Go ahead and get the trips. I had 3 trips that I could have sold him. 1 to Hawaii, 1 to London, and then a trip to the Black Hills. All of those were at least $1,200. I ended up selling him on a trip to the Black Hills for like $1,200. I'm like, look, you can go to the zoo. That's one time. Your 9-month-old baby is not even going to remember that. But if you go to the Black Hills, that's selfies all day long. Like, you posting pictures on Instagram all day long. Like, that is a trip that you are going to remember. That's a trip that you and your wife are going to remember. And it's a history lesson. And I gave him a little bit of history behind the Black Hills. It's not just 4 presidents. But some people say that over the, like, they built the Black Hills, they built those presidents over a Native American site. So I encouraged him to do his research. Like, a lot of people believe that Mount Rushmore is a cover up for a Native American. I want to say it's a burial ground. So even though I wasn't sure, I encouraged him to look up the history, because there's a lot of history about that area and about Mount Rushmore and the Black Hills and what have you. So basically my job was to, like, I upsold him from a trip to the zoo, from a trip to the Black Hills, a free event that he could literally go to every single day, to a trip that was more impactful, but was a once in a lifetime thing. So he was excited about his trip. The next kid that came to my booth, I mean, this guy, 14-year-old, he was one of those kids who just thinks money grows on trees. And again, I'm trying to sell him on trips to Hawaii and London and the Black Hills, like the big ticket items. So immediately I said, or when he first came, I said, what do you want? Because I want to get a sense of what he, like, where his mind is at, what he's interested in. And then based on that initial response, based on that initial desire, then I upsold him on something that was a little bit better. And I put better in quotations, not financially better, definitely, but better as a life experience. So I think he said he wanted to go somewhere. I don't really remember, but I said, okay. And I pretty much spit the same script that I did to the other one. I was like, okay, that's okay. That's well and good, but that's for amateurs. You know, you're a baller, you're a boss. I can tell just by looking at you. Because I'm the same way. People like me, people like you, we don't go to these low-level trips. We go to places like London. We go to places like Hawaii. We go to Mount Rushmore. We go to the Black Hills. And he bought it, hook, line, and sinker. So he ended up buying 2 trips to London and two trips to Hawaii. No, I'm sorry, one trip to London and one trip to Hawaii. And then after he bought those big ticket items, I was like, look, you could buy whatever else you want. Because at that point, I felt guilty. Like, the trip to London, I think, was $1,500. The trip to Hawaii, I think, was $1,200. So the entire time at my booth, he spent he almost spent $3,000. And at that point, that's where my guilt came in. I was like, ugh, you paid a lot of money and did not have to. But this is going to be an awesome lesson. So after he purchased those two trips, I was like, look, you can buy anything else you want because I'm satisfied. Another girl came to my booth, and honestly, I could tell that she had her head on straight, that she wasn't going to spend a whole lot of money. But I did the same thing. She said, I think she wanted a trip to the zoo as well. Now, a trip to the zoo is free. I said, hold on. It's you, your husband, and this girl had she had a 2-month-old. She had a 2-month-old. So with her situation, I think she came in initially with the zoo. That's what she wanted at first. I said, look, the zoo is all well and good, but nobody's going to really remember the zoo. Like, your baby is not going to remember the zoo. Your boyfriend is, or your husband or whoever is not, like, as adults, we don't really get excited about the zoo. Like, that's kid stuff. And the kid that you have is not going to really remember it. However, if you get a cat, now, a cat was one of the items on the board that was $25 a month. And I just thought it was, but with the cat, you didn't buy the cat. It was just $25 a month for the cat food, which I thought was weird, but whatever. Let's play ball. It's like, okay, you go to the zoo, that's one time, and then you're not gonna really go again. Like, that gets old. But if you get this cat at $25 a month, like, You can come in the house and the cat is going to greet you. I don't know. I've never had a cat. I don't know how that works. I was like, you come in the house, the cat greets you. Like, you can play with an animal. If you like animals, you can play with an animal every day for 30 days. Instead of just going to the zoo once. Right? And she was like, okay. So that's one. I got three more. No, I think she bought two tickets. No, she bought the, she bought two cats or one. I don't remember, but she definitely got a cat. So now I'm like, okay, one down, three more to go. And I'm just constantly upselling. Think she might've wanted to go dancing. Now on this card, on that dancing card, you had two options. You could either just dance at home in the living room, of course, completely free, or you could go to the club and dance. So I was like, look, you don't want to stay home and dance. Like, that gets old after a while. But if you go to the club and dance, like, you know how much fun the club is going to be. And you're not just going to pay for your husband to go to the club, or your husband is not going to let you go to the club by yourself. So you definitely got to have two tickets. She said, okay. So I sold her on a cat at $25 a month and a club, which might have been, I don't know, that might have been like close to $50 or so. So my whole goal was to just upsell them, get them to spend as much as possible, which was very contrary to the exercise, but it was very applicable to what they would encounter in the real world. Because, look, half the people that go to the club on Friday nights or Saturday or whatever, everybody has the option of just staying they behind in the living room, putting on some music, and then just dancing there. But everybody wants to go to the club. Everybody wants to show off. But So that's very, very applicable to the real world. So that's what I wanted to expose them to. But after the exercise, they're tallying up how much they spent at all the different booths. And in true salesman fashion, one girl said, "Ooh, I got $141 left over." And me, I'm like, "Who got some extra money? Who got some leftover money? How much you got? $141. All right, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this ticket to a rock concert." Like, I'm constantly in their ear trying to get them to buy, because that's what the real world is. Like, you have ads everywhere, whether it's on Instagram, like Facebook, which none of them have, or it's on Instagram or like social media, or you may have a friend who you go to school with a true religion shirt or some true religion jeans. Bam. That's how these companies advertise that way. They put their giant names and logos and insignias and things on the clothes to get people around them to wear it. Called social proof. You don't really want it, but you want it because your friends have it or the people around you have it. Social proof. You only do things because your friends have it. So all of these are, like, I'm trying to put them as much in the real world as possible. But after that, the one kid who bought a ticket to Hawaii, the one kid who bought a ticket to London, he ended up, I kid you not, folks, he ended up like $4,000 in debt. In 4 minutes, he ended up being $4,000 in debt. And the people who were, the lady who was monitoring and guiding them through the activity, their teacher, so to speak, saw his purchases and said, "You got two trips to London? No, you got two trips? You got a trip to London and a trip to Hawaii?" His response was, "Yeah." And he looked at me and he said, "Yeah, I've always wanted to go to London." And at that point, that's where the regret for me set in. I was like, "Oh, snap." They really put, I knew they would, but this was hard evidence of that they are going to put their real desires, their real insecurities into this activity. The people that know me very, very well, or just the people that have seen a couple of my posts on Instagram, know that I love social psychology. And lately, I've been reading a book called Influence. One book called Influence, the other one called Persuasion, both by the same author whose name temporarily escapes me. But just check it out. Influence and Persuasion. Both of them talk about how to encourage people to make a decision and what factors. Yeah, how you can encourage somebody to make a decision, or what factors are in somebody's life that encourage them to make a decision. Often it's manipulated. Often it's subtle. Often it's not manipulated and completely happenstance. But one thing that I know about myself in regards to psychology is, and a lot of people will admit that, a lot of our spending habits, not even talking about teenagers, but even as adults, a lot of our spending habits, a lot of the things that we spend our money on, waste our money on, come from the fact that we care about other people's opinions. We value somebody else's opinion about us more than we value ourselves. So switching recording location, so we're going to go ahead and switch topics. We went from knowing that our spending habits mask our insecurities. We know that we value, a lot of us
value other people's opinions of ourselves, we value other people's opinion more than we value those opinions of ourselves. So we spend to kind of give them a better view of us than we have of ourselves, i.e. pants or shirts or, as you get older, cars and houses. So now we go into what happens during the sale, like the mindset that happens during the sale. And one thing that happened during this exercise, during this game, was that the gentleman who I bankrupted, or I helped bankrupt, he only went bankrupt because the fact that he trusted me as an adult, as somebody who has been there, done that, who has had experience spending, who was the manager of this store, so to speak, even though this store was fictitious, with all of that, he put his trust in me. And a lot of times our youth spend because they see adults spend. They justify their spending because they see mom do it, they see dad do it, they see their mentor do it, they see their teacher do it. So if they've been there, done that, then it must be okay for them, not realizing that, look, you're in a different situation. Not only are you in a different situation, but just because that adult did something, just because your teacher, your mentor, your mom, your dad, whoever, just because they did it doesn't mean that you have to do it. You don't know what their finances look like. They could be in debt up to their eyeballs and you have no idea. They go to work every day. You have no idea they're in debt up to their eyeballs. They go to church every Sunday. You have no idea they're in debt up to their eyeballs. They buy a new car. They buy a new house. They buy new pants. They buy new shirts. They buy new electronics. But you have no idea they are up to debt in their eyeballs, up to debt to their eyeballs. So with our youth not seeing that, they don't see the numbers. They just see what happens on the outside. So as mentors, as adults, as teachers, as parents, what I encourage you to do is look, just explain to your kids. Look, explain to them the numbers. Please do not be afraid to tell them the numbers. Don't be afraid to tell them what's going on. Don't be afraid to give it to them straight. A lot of times we don't put our kids in fake environments, but we let them see the facade. We let them see these fake environments. We let them live these fake environments without telling them, without being real ourselves, but without letting them know, look, this is why things are the way they are. We're not real with our finances. We'll buy them stuff and just to please them, which I get it, because you always want to provide for your kids. But teaching them finances is so important, not just on the balance sheet, but it's important for self-confidence. It's important for their self-esteem, because if we don't stop this now, if they don't realize it now, if they don't learn it now, then those insecurities, those bad spending habits will take them far into adulthood. And a lot of times, we know, adults never really come to grips with their own insecurities. We just spend to mask those insecurities. So one of the things that I really want to do with this fair that I'm planning, and again, this game that I visited earlier was just research, but later on in the year, maybe in April in Jacksonville, I am preparing this real world financial literacy fair that'll teach them the numbers, that'll teach them about banking, teach them about budgeting, teach them about insurance, medical insurance, renter's insurance, and other types of insurance. Teach them social skills. And depending on the ages, whether the 13 to 15 or 16 to 18 or 18 to 21, the approach to teaching them social skills is different. Maybe 13 to 15 may be how you present yourself. Like everybody, the way you present yourself is how people think of you. Like it's a brand. Think of like your Coca-Cola, your Amazons, your McDonald's, your Pepsis. What do you think of when you see these brands? You think trust, you think flavor, you think innovation. There's a lot of different adjectives that you could use to describe these brands. Well, when people look at you, what is your brand? What is your reputation? Do you have a reputation of being trustworthy? Do you have a reputation of having integrity? Do you have a reputation of being violent? Do you have a reputation of being disrespectful? All right, what is your brand? The way you present yourself, not only physically, the way you present yourself verbally, the way you present yourself mentally, the way you present yourself emotionally, all plays a role in how people treat you. So sometimes if people treat you a certain way, if people are consistently treating you a certain way, if people are consistently disrespecting you, if people are consistently treating you a certain way, then maybe, just maybe it's the message that you're sending. Because people are going to respond to the message that you're sending. People are going to respond to how you look. People are going to respond to how you speak. People are going to respond to your emotions. So maybe the way they treat you is a reflection of how you treat them. So what is your brand? How do you want to be known? You want to be known as somebody who is, do you want to be known as somebody who has integrity? Do you want to be known as somebody who's trustworthy? Do you want to be known as somebody who's clean cut? Do you want to be known as somebody who is dependable? Do you want to be known as somebody who is reliable? How do you want to be known? How do you want to be treated? So that's, you know, that was kind of deep and touched on a different part. But one thing that I really want to do with this fair and teaching these social skills is not only developing, not only allowing these teenagers to learn how to manage their finances, but how to manage what goes on internally that manifests itself in how they handle these finances. You know what? I feel pretty good about that episode. So if you appreciate it, if you found value in anything, if it's elevated your esteem a little bit, if you've gotten anything out of that episode at all, then please share the podcast with someone who you think would get value out of the podcast as well. Subscribe, and I will see you guys next week.